knowing without thought. Have you ever watched a beehive closely? It doesn't matter where you have studied the most advanced level of engineering, there is still something to learn from a beehive. What a fabulous feat of engineering it is! It is truly the best apartment complex you could imagine, exquisitely designed and structured and amazingly resilient. In no kind of weather have you ever seen a beehive falling off a tree, have you? Although it is a magnificent piece of work, do the bees have engineering plans in their heads? No. The plans are in their bodies. They know exactly what to do because of a blueprint in their systems. Spiritual knowledge or knowing is always transmitted like this, not by thought, not by word, but in the same way that bees transmit the understanding of how to build beehives across generations. Once this knowing is transmitted or downloaded, as it were, everything that you need to know is right within you. When you download a certain type of software onto your computer, you don't have to understand how all of it works. You don't have to read every word that is written in the software. You press one key and it produces a result, another key, another result. Suddenly you have a different kind of phenomena. I make a distinction between knowledge and knowing. Knowledge is essentially accumulated information. All information is only related to the physical nature of existence. Knowing, on the other hand, is a living intelligence. With or without you, it still is. You're either in it or you're not. That is the only choice you have. There is an intrinsic intelligence within you, as we have seen earlier, is capable of transforming a piece of bread into a human being. The most sophisticated machine, including the brain, was created by this intrinsic intelligence. Right now, you are still trying to use a limited section of your brain, and you still think that is intelligence. No, there is something within you that can create an entire human brain in all its magnificent complexity and capability. That something functions in an altogether different way. For example, I don't think with my head, but with every cell in my body. This makes my thinking an organic, seamless, and integrated process. There is a certain level of integratedness about it because it involves all of me. I don't have much thought in my mind at all, unless I choose to think. Nothing has ever been out of place in this existence. Things have only been out of place in human societies. Between this piece of life and that piece of life, there can be a comparison. But for the intelligence that is making all life happen, there is no context, no comparison, because there is no other. You cannot say whether it is now in place or not. It is always in place. There is no other way for it to be. And the pursuit of yoga is just this: moving from this small head full of information to a cosmos of intelligence. What a tragic choice people so often end up making, choosing the finiteness of the human brain over a universe of infinite knowing. Sadhana. Just work at removing from the mind the idea that thought is intelligence. The whole process of creation, from a single atom to the cosmos, is a fantastic expression of intelligence. Right now, within your own body, there is a throbbing intelligence that is the very source of creation. With the overrated intellect that you own, can you even understand the activity of a single cell in your body in its entirety? The first step towards moving from the trap of intellect to the lap of a larger intelligence is to recognize that every aspect of life, from a grain of sand to a mountain, a drop to an ocean, from the atomic to the cosmic, is a manifestation of a far greater intelligence than your minuscule intellect. If you take this one step, life will start speaking to you like never before. Believing versus seeking. Once it happened, on a certain day, two Irishmen were working on the street in front of a London brothel. They saw a Protestant minister coming their way. He rolled up his collar, put his head down, and quietly slipped into the brothel. Two men looked at each other and shrugged. "See, what else can you expect from a Protestant?" They continued to work. After some time, a rabbi came by. He had a muffler around his throat, almost covering his face. He ducked into the brothel too. The men were deeply pained and shook their heads sadly. "What has happened? Times have gone bad. A religious man in a brothel. Why is this happening?" After a while, the local bishop came along. He looked this way and that, tightened his cloak around himself, slipped into the brothel. One of the men turned to the other and said, "One of the girls must be really sick." The moment you get strongly identified, you lose your perspective on life. The ideas of good and bad, right and wrong, are all your mental constructs. They have nothing to do with life as such. What was considered to be moral 100 years ago is intolerable today. What you think is very good, your children despise. Your ideas of good and bad are just a certain level of prejudice against life. The moment you get identified with your limited ideas of morality, you become completely twisted. Your intellect functions around these identifications in such a way that you never see the world as it is. If you want an element of spirituality to enter your life, the first thing you must do is drop these rigid ideas of virtue and vice and learn to look at life just the way it is. One of the biggest problems in the world today is that right from a person's childhood, an inflexible system of morality has been imposed on the mind. Whatever you consider good, you naturally get identified with it. Whatever you consider bad, you're naturally repelled by it. This attraction and aversion is the basis of all strong identification. The nature of your mind is that whatever you are averse to dominates it. Moralists and preachers have for generations told humanity to eschew evil thoughts. That is a surefire strategy to achieve the reverse. Now if you resist that supposedly evil thought, it becomes a full-time job. There is nothing else going on in your head. The idea of moral superiority has been the source of too many inhuman acts to be ignored. Most people who believe they are virtuous are hard to live with. Besides, they spend most of their lives trying to avoid what they consider wrong or sinful. That usually means they are constantly thinking about it. Avoiding something is not freedom from it. Such morality is based on exclusion. Spirituality, on the other hand, is born of inclusion. The essential nature of our humanity has been so suppressed and distorted that the substitute of morality has been brought in to bring some order and sanity to our lives. This has happened because we have not done anything to keep our humanity active. If your humanity were active, there would be no need for morality at all. Morality always differs from person to person, according to time, place, situation, and convenience. But wherever humanity has found its expression, at any time in history or in any culture in the world, it has always been the same and will always be. On a superficial level, in terms of our values, morals and ethics, each one of us may be different, but if you know how to pierce a person deep enough to touch his humanity, each one of us is the same. To impose morality, you don't need any involvement with people. You just have to dole out the diktats. Be good, speak kindly. If you speak in anger, the consequences will be dire, and so forth. But if you want to kindle humanity in a person, it takes much more involvement. It means giving yourself. Morality is worthwhile because it helps ensure social order, but it is capable of wreaking inner havoc. Since nobody can live by morals prescribed by most religions, most of humanity lives in a state of perpetual guilt, shame, and fear. This is a tragically crippled existence. Humanity will also bring social order, but it requires no external enforcement whatsoever. Make a list of all the things that the major religions of the world call a sin, and you will find just to be alive is a sin. If you are born, it is a sin. If you menstruate, it is a sin. If you copulate, it's a sin. Forget all this. Even if you so much as eat a chocolate, you could commit a sin. Since the very process of life is a sin, you live in a perpetual guilt and terror. If people were not so racked by fear and guilt, the temples, mosques, and churches in the world would not be as congested as they are now. If you were naturally joyful, you would go and sit on the beach or listen to the whisper of the leaves on the trees. Only because religions have instilled such a sense of fear and shame are you ashamed of your very biology. Now you have to go to some place that is considered holy to wash it off. People always find ways to subvert values, morals, and ethics. But when you are naturally joyful, you are naturally pleasant with the world around you. Spirituality does not mean moving away from life. It means becoming alive to the core, in the fullest possible way. With age, physical agility may diminish, but the level of joy and aliveness need not. If your level of joy and aliveness is declining, you are committing suicide in installments. Unfortunately, all sorts of belief systems are passed off as spirituality today. Spiritual process is always a quest. There is a significant difference between believing and seeking. Believing means you have assumed something that you do not know. Seeking means you have realized that you do not know. This brings an enormous amount of flexibility. The moment you believe something, you bring certain rigidity into the very life process that you are. This rigidity is not just in attitude, it percolates into every aspect of your life and is the cause of enormous amount of suffering in the world. Human society reflects the inner experience of human beings. Creating human beings who are flexible and willing to look at everything in a fresh, unprejudiced way, rather than being stuck in beliefs and opinions, definitely makes for a different kind of society.